You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Hanging out with Clement
on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
So, hanging out feature, we do it every single Sunday. No, not Sunday. Why am I rushing? We do it every single Thursday after the news at 11 o'clock. And today I'm hanging out with the people's advocate. That's what people call him. He's a lawyer. He's a politician. And this is Advocate Dalimpofu. Advocate, welcome. Thank you so much for coming to hang out with me.
Thank you, Clement.
Before we get to it, I want to get your, this is sad news coming through about Professor Hlengiwe Mkhize. You've known him. You've known her quite well.
Yes, no, I've known her quite well. I know her husband and I've visited them. Mm. Yeah, I used to serve with her in the branch executive of the ANC, I think around about 1999 or 2000. Mm. She was a very dedicated fighter, particularly for women's rights. Yeah, it's a very sad, a sad day.
Well, what a sad day. So you've walked to our studio and your office is just across the street.
Yeah, literally two offices away from
me. Why are you not working from home?
I'm one of those who are old-fashioned.
Yeah.
I must say that my technology use has improved significantly since COVID, but I still have to go there and work with my PA and all sorts of things. And the books, most of my books are here.
At the office. Mm. The last time I saw you, you were at the airport posing for a picture with the father of the then believed to be the D couplet. Do you remember that? That's the last time I saw you actually on Twitter.
Oh, really?
Well, yes.
And then it means you're not on Twitter.
Not that often. Yeah. I use it for work most of the time.
No, it was actually not at the airport. It was at the, inside the plane. I just
bumped
into them.
Did you make any donation?
No. Thank God I didn't. Yeah. No, it was, it must have been June. Because I just came back from a case in Cape Town and happened to be sitting next to the two gentlemen.
And they were going to get a donation actually in Cape Town.
They were coming back.
Getting about R1 million of the donation. And then the rest is history.
Yeah.
Where does Dali come from? Because you're Christopher Dalukolo Mbovu.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Actually, that the Dali thing came from my matric class. I used to have my groupies were mostly women.
Yeah,
and they decided to shorten my name.
Udali.
Yeah,
and it has that romantic ring to it.
Yeah,
right?
it did help here and there. Yeah,
oh.
in those youth days. Yeah, but I think maybe later on people adopted it. Some of them all for different reasons. Others maybe because it would have been difficult to say Dalukolo.
Udalukolo.
By the time I got to university at Wits, it was Dali. It almost became my permanent name.
Oh, okay. So we're going to get to know you, your childhood. We'll talk about you leaving the ANC, joining the EFF, how you manage what often some people say is the conflict between politics and the law. Mm-hmm. But I want us to start with one of your favorite songs. This one is by B.B. Winans. It All Comes Down to Love. Why is this a favorite song for you?
It's a great song. The beat is good, but the message is super.
Mm.
And I just love B.B. Winans, but B.B. and Sisi Winans.
Yeah, they're amazing. Have you seen them live?
I have, yeah. When they came down.
A couple of years ago.
This gambling place in the East End.
Carnival,
yes.
Yeah, I was there as well.
Yes, a great show.
They're amazing. So let's listen to B.B. Winans. It All Comes Down to Love. Winans, It All Comes Down to Love. That's one of Advocate Dalimpofu's favorite songs. On that note, Advocate, take us back to your childhood. Growing up in the Eastern Cape, how was that? And at what point did you move to Joburg?
It was quite eventful. I grew up in a very poor area called Duncan Village. Even the poorest part of Duncan Village.
Mm.
but I also grew up in the rural Eastern Cape. So I would alternate. 1 year I would go to school in the township, so to speak, and then when my mother ran out of money, she'd ship me back to the rural area. Then when she's gathered enough more money, bring me back.
Yeah, were you with the parents in the rural area?
With the grandparents, yes, with the grandparents. My parents worked in East London. My mother was a domestic worker there. So she would, as I say, I think she preferred me to be schooling in the urban area. The urban schools were considered to be better. But now and again, but that helped actually in a way, because it gave me a sense of both urban and rural life, which later in life came in quite handy. Yeah. So I only I stayed there until my matric. And during my matric year, I was arrested and for involvement in the school boycott of 1980. And then I was arrested again in 1981 for furthering the aims of the ANC, as they called it. After that, I was released from my second detention too late to go back to school. So I went to work. I actually worked in a factory.
After matric?
No, before. Let's say. Yeah.
Okay.
And so I had to go and work. Some people in East London still call me Msebenzi. I was involved in the unions and all that. Yeah. But then in 1982, I decided, no, let me go back to school and finish my matric. And so I came to Joburg basically to do my first year. So before that, I was in the Eastern Cape.
And the interest in law, did the politics and your involvement when you were still young and in university somehow influence you and got you to be passionate about justice?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, when I grew up, I used to be called the lawyer in the house because I used to answer back or ask why this, why that. And but the focused interest really came, I think, during my trial in 1981. I had to undergo a trial for arson, sabotage, and all sorts of things. And was represented by a very young advocate from PE. And at the end of the trial, he gave me a great compliment, I suppose, because of how I had performed or answered the questions, to say, look, you'd make a great lawyer one day. And yeah, so that was always at the back of my mind. But unfortunately, because of the financial issues, I was also good at maths and science. So actually, when I came here to Wits, it was to study engineering.
Yeah,
Which I did for a year or two and lost interest completely. It was the most boring thing I've ever done.
You were not failing; it was just boring.
Well, I was also not passing as well as I was used to, because I was like a top student. So it was also a shock to do this. But the real turning point came when I had to do my practicals, and I went to some place called Val Reef's mine and sat there for almost 2 months analyzing a rock. And I said, well, this is going to be the rest of my life. And then I switched back to law, which was, as I say, my first interest. Incidentally, I was also in trouble at university in my first year. So during the disciplinary hearing that followed, I met Professor Dugard, who also thought I would make a good lawyer. So I called him and said, I'll take you up on that. And the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah. Are you still enjoying being in the legal fraternity?
Love it. I could not do anything better or different. It really is my passion.
How tricky is it to balance the politics and the law and the justice? Because often you've been criticized for taking up cases of your political opponents. Sometimes people say, yeah, but every time he argues in court, he plays politics. How do you balance it? Do you like control yourself not to be too political or influenced by politics and just look at the law, or is it just natural for you?
No, I think that the line between politics and law is, in any event, a fine one. Because, you know, what we call law, or rather what we call politics, is a set of laws. I mean, the politicians are the one who produce the laws, after all. But also, for me, it's really the professional side of it is completely different. it really almost comes naturally. And I don't think that it's anything unique to lawyers. People only understand it when you make other examples. When you say, for example, I always say to people, well, let's say I was a doctor.
Mm.
So would you say I must only treat EFF patients or DA patients, or I must turn away those who come from the UDM? Obviously not. Or if I was a teacher, I can't say I'm going to teach only the kids of the DA or whatever.
Mm.
So it's just professionalism. It's the same thing. It's really not rocket science to be able to make that separation.
Yeah.
And as far as taking up cases, also people, I think, particularly for advocates, they have the wrong thing. It's almost like you go to some street corner and put up a sign that say, I'm an advocate, please come to me. It doesn't work that way. So it's the people from the other political parties who approach me, which I think is a compliment, because they know I've never hidden my political leanings.
Mm.
But I've represented people from the DA, from the NFP, IFP, UDM, COPE, what have you, and they come in their numbers.
Mm.
Even within the ANC, I represent this faction, the other days that faction.
Mm.
So maybe one should ask them why they come to me
out
of all the advocates.
What about the irony of, because often, I mean, obviously, and I know people have even brought in what you've said in the past and said, but here's what you've said about Zuma. You've said he must go to jail.
Yeah.
And then now you have to be in court and say, he's an innocent man.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
No, that again, that's a misconception, because in particular, politicians, I suppose lawyers as well.
Yeah.
You know, when we are in the ring, quote unquote, people think that we're really like, you know, enemies. So they get shocked if I can. I remember when I was running a campaign against Musi Maimane for the premiership of Gauteng.
Yeah. Mm.
So we would go to this debate and call each other this and the other. And then after that, we go and have a drink or coffee or tea and talk about other things in life. Yeah. So it's the same. I mean, I was laughing when there was this video about me, I think I was on some podium saying that Zuma is this and the other.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think these people are naive. They think Jacob Zuma doesn't know that on the campaign trail, I've called him all sorts of things. But for some reason, which I don't know, he decided out of all the advocates in the country, he approached me to represent him. But it doesn't mean he doesn't know. I'm sure if I looked hard enough, I might even find something where he said something against me and so on.
Yeah.
So it's never personal like that. You know, people think that, you know, if I say, you know, don't vote for Clement because he's going to steal all your money, that, you know, political banter is not something that I think if politicians themselves take literally.
Yeah. I've seen that. It used to shock me when I used to go to Parliament and I used to cover the State of the Nation address. And I would often see, like, even EFF MPs and how they would just get along, even with, at the time, Speaker of Parliament, Baleka Mbete. But when they are in Parliament, they are so tough on her.
Absolutely.
And it just didn't make sense. Yeah. But I suppose it's sometimes we don't understand that when you are there, you are working and you can still be cordial towards each other.
At a personal level. Yeah, you are representing a particular viewpoint.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not, if you're an opposition politician, for example, it's not your job to be saying, oh, this is great and so on.
Mm.
Your job is to confront. That's how democracy work. Your job is to make sure that you show all the loopholes on the other side. And in a way, it's much simpler for someone like me, because again, it's the same. I mean, some of my best friends, I get into court and they are representing the other side. I'm not going to say just because it's my friend, oh, well, I'll take it easy. I go for it. And they go for it as well.
Yeah.
They'll say, well, I don't know what this guy is talking
Rip
about.
Rip each other apart.
Absolutely, yeah. And then after that, we have a drink and laugh about it.
Okay, let me take some calls coming through on 011-883-0702. Gift, you calling us from Pretoria. You know the advocate.
Yes, him banana elbelo et tobololo zanda vise.
Ah,
sabulela shubi. Ah, sabulela kakulu. No, I'm very well. Thank you very much. If you praise me like that, those praise words are that boils my blood.
Yeah,
he knows me, this one.
Yeah. So you're a relative gift?
Yes, he probably knows my uncle.
Yes, I know. Yeah. Oh, yes, thank you. Yes, yes.
Oh, huh? Gift. That's amazing. Thanks for calling us.
Is my rural route. That's where I come
from. Okay. Yeah, Godfrey, you are in Germiston. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Clement.
Hey, Tara.
Sure.
Okay. I'm saying to the producer, when we are being beaten up by the Siskai government, Clement, I can't use certain other ways like this. Om Chanam, with the tear from the Senecas and the guys here at Birds, were always up, standing up for us.
Thank you, Chanam. Thank you so much. That was the early 80s.
During the student protests and movements.
Yes, early 80s, the Siskai government, the people who arrested me when I was 17 years old.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
And tear from Senecas is up to today, one of my biggest friends. He was the student leader at WITS when I got there.
Okay.
And later I became the president of the Black Student Society there. And a great, great man.
Yeah. Godfrey in Germiston, thank you so much. Someone has sent a message here, Advocate says, wow, Clement, Mr. Dalimbov is so down to earth, quite the opposite of when he's seen on TV. And some people have said that about you, that, oh, this guy, you know, every time he even argues in court, he's so arrogant, he has an axe, you know, to destroy the ANC, you know, he's a, like, you, they say you are emotional.
Yeah.
How do you take that?
Criticism on social media, I don't take to heart at all. I mean, because I know how that space works. Yeah. Mm. But also, I think, you know, people who know me, the real me, I mean, they basically take care of that. Yeah. I think that the idea of people who think, everyone always says, look, you're so humble. And so, and I said, it's not, for me, it's not humility, or it's not like some word that, it's me. Yeah. I'm like this. I love people very much. All people from all walks of life. I can never look down on anyone. Maybe, and again, it's not because of some special thing. It's because I myself, I'm a product of probably, I was, you know, if you had seen me 30, 40 years ago, you wouldn't even look at me twice, because I was just some guy from some one-room house and semi-shack somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's not possible for me to look down on anybody.
Yeah. Are you telling me that you've never in your career had the slightest bit of, I hate this person and I want to get them at them? I want to give you an example. When you were at the State Capture Commission and you had to cross-examine Dalimpov, I mean, that was heated.
Gordon.
Pravin Gordhan, sorry. That was heated on any level. Mm. And most of us were like, oh my God, you've got Pravin Gordhan who's not answering questions. You've got you, who are seen to be harsh on Pravin Gordhan. Would you say that you were, for some reason, it was politics that took over and made you be even harder on him? Because we know what posture you've taken as the EFF.
No, not really. It's, you know, any lawyer will tell you, you take your witness as they come. You have to study. Cross-examination is one of my favorite things. And so, because it's a skill. It's a skill. Now, it looks easy when you're watching it in a movie or somebody else do it. But it's probably one of the most difficult things you have to do as a lawyer.
Yeah.
Because you really have to get certain answers from somebody whose mission is not to give you those answers. And so it's a particular skill. And then you know a particular person, somebody like Gordhan, I know his attitude. I know he's going to come there and try to lecture and so on. So you have to deal with him in a particular way. And, you know, lawyers will know. I went there probably to get 5 or 6 specific answers, and I got them. That's it. How I get them is another
matter. As long as you get that.
Absolutely. And the irony with that is that I had nothing against Pravin as a person, and I know him quite well. In fact, on a previous occasion, funnily enough, when he appeared at the State Capture Commission, I went to greet him and extended my hand, and he refused to.
What?
Yeah. So it was exactly the other way around. I was shocked because for me, it's never at that level. Yeah. So
you okay? What else do you still want to? Do you want to end up as a judge? Do you want to end up in the Constitutional Court? Perhaps a Chief Justice one day?
Not really. You know, I don't, because I love what I do so much, I never think that far. Yeah. Being a judge, if I do that, it will be after a lot of arm twisting, because I've acted as a judge. I started as an acting judge as far back as 20 years ago, in 2000.
Yeah.
And I found it so boring.
Yeah.
And so it's not something that I would aspire to. If I did it, it would be out of a sense of duty. Not so much because it's not as exciting as this. It's like saying, imagine if you're a player, a soccer player, and then someone says, okay, you must now be a referee. It's like, it's much better to have a side and, you know, and fight for your side, as it were, rather than,
okay, we're going to take the latest in our news shortly, but I want to, as I end off the theme around law and politics, do you think you started getting more clients after you joined politics?
No.
Yeah?
Certainly not. My practice has always been busy. And, the other thing is that I joined politics when I was 14 or 15. So by the time I became a lawyer, I was already an activist. So again, it's difficult whether my political career brought more clients. I think if it did, Clement, it might be something like this. And that might be an answer to the earlier issue about why people from opposing political parties come to me. There might be a sense in them that because some of them is because I know them, but others might think that I understand that world more. So if there's a political fight, for example, the Mahashule case, whom I've known for years and years, he will know that he doesn't have to explain certain things to me. He just has to say, look, this is what happened, this is what happened, and then we deal with it that way,
Okay. We'll continue our discussion with Advocate Dalimpofu. Lots of you are calling in, you're sending your WhatsApp messages. I'll read some of those after the latest in Eyewitness News.
Hanging out with Clement on 702. Let's walk the talk.
It's 23 minutes before 11 o'clock. I'm hanging out with Advocate Dalimpofu. You know, Advocate, I'm starting to realize that people are experiencing you differently. I'm getting tweets of people saying, I'm enjoying this conversation. I didn't know Advocate is so calm. Someone else says, hi, Clement. Honestly, I really can't understand how calm the Advocate is. I can almost see his smile from far. And then someone else says, Jong, that's my crush there. My husband knows it's a non-negotiable.
Yeah, let him know. He must know.
Just like the EFF, non-negotiable cardinal pillars. And then someone says, my goodness, one can hear Dali's smile through his voice. I think he's innately a good person, but politics and law somehow brings the somehow harsher person that's not in him. That's another SMS coming through here. Someone is asking on Twitter, have you gotten your jab?
Yeah, I did. I got, actually, they just invited me for another one on Tuesday.
The second dose?
Yeah.
Okay. Thought you guys were waiting for Sputnik.
No, we don't. Sputnik is not for us, it's for the people.
Yeah.
What we are saying is that they, you know, it must be made accessible. There shouldn't be discrimination or favoring the Western products over, you know, those. It's science, really. I mean, I think it's a simple question of the efficacy of the vaccines rated internationally. So, I mean, it would be foolhardy if there's one that's rated 96%. I mean, I don't know the exact thing.
Yeah.
Then that should be the one that we should get, probably. Than one that's rated 80%. It's just logic.
Naledi, you're calling us from Rustenburg. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Daddy?
Okay, good morning.
I want to remind you that it's Naledi from Rustenburg. One time when we were still working for Mr. Mosanek at 36th Street, there was a big company I sued the 1.5 million. Then when I came, they were still tiny. Then it was at night. Then I said, "Where's Mr. Moshan?" Again, said, "No, he's not in, but I can help him." Don't tell me that you are shy, because those people owe me money. And now I got a letter that I'm going to get 1 rand from 100 rand. I won't mention the name, but I think you remember the lady from Rosemary. Yes. I don't care. You can go and tell me. This is not the best way you used to party with the Fakudias and babies. This time I'm with you.
That's I remember that. That was in the early 90s.
I didn't get money. I just cheated. I said, I'm going to catch you.
Thank you, my sister. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Naledi, thank you for calling us. Mkululi, you are in Boksburg. Good morning.
Good morning. Smoleni Mhlekazi kunjani?
Malo tata siyaphila njani?
Ngiyaphila. Ngicela ukubuza, why is it so difficult to go directly to consult with an advocate? You must first go through a junior lawyer, or I don't know what they call.
Attorney.
Before you can get to the attorneys, yes. Thanks for correction. Before you can reach the advocate. Also, why is it most of the advocates are not doing pro bono, especially in a deep rural areas where people need service, but they don't have mula to pay the advocate or the attorney?
Yeah, I'm clearly thanks for that question.
Yeah, good questions. Well, the first one is actually just a hang up, something that we inherited from our colonial past. There's no real reason. It's a professional role. It has now been tempered by the new Legal Practice Act, in that there are advocates who are now allowed to take clients directly. But the logic was always that the advocate's profession is a referral profession. So again, if you use the example of doctors, your GP would be your attorney. And then if they have to refer you to a heart specialist or whatever, then that would be where you are referred. Because we advocates are essentially litigation and opinion specialists. But the reality is that in a country like this, that system is unsuitable, because it means you have to literally have to pay for two lawyers when you really need one. So some of us have been against this for a long time, to say we should have, if you really can, you can't talk about access to justice and then make it as difficult as this, because most people can't even afford an attorney, let alone an advocate, but to have to pay for both is usually undesirable. There are instances where the services of an attorney are obviously needed in a particular type of case. I think that's the pro bono issue. Well, we have a very weak system of pro bono in South Africa. So some of us do. So there's, for example, at the bar where I practice, you have to do 20 hours in a year or something of pro bono just to comply. But most people, I mean, somebody like me, maybe half of my work is pro bono. You know, I always laugh. In fact, we're talking about Twitter, what Clement was talking about. When I on Twitter, everyone says, "No, Mpofu is just after the money." You know, if I represent Clement, no, it's because
he badly advises
money. It's just the money. And the funny thing is that every time they say that about a particular client, it's usually the one who hasn't paid a cent. Yeah. So most of the cases, we don't really do it for money. Yeah. And then when you get kind of a run-of-the-mill case, they subsidize the ones that you do for free. That's the story. And you're quite right. Another issue which we have introduced now is community service. I agree with you. I think lawyers should actually be forced maybe to do a week or so in a rural area somewhere, you know, law students as well. It would really bring access to those people who would otherwise not. And you can give advice about simple things like how to get an ID, you know, what happens if someone gets injured and that kind of thing. Yeah.
All right. There's so many questions about the law and justice, and I'll get to them shortly. But between you and I, advocate, and no one else is listening, speaking of paying for legal fees, the former president, is it pro bono?
Well, I don't answer those questions while the matter is still going.
You don't
going.
Trust us.
Especially for a client like that, yeah.
Okay.
No, just to respect his confidentiality as well, yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. I was just pushing there.
No,
that's what
you have to try. You have to try, yeah.
So you left the ANC. Was it in 2014?
2013.
This is after over 30 years with the organization. Was it painful for you? And now, when you see what's happening with the ANC and you look back and you reflect on the decision you took, what goes through your mind?
Look, let's start with your second question. It's a decision that I've never regretted, not even for 1 second. Yeah, because, as you say, it was... The ANC was almost part of me, as it were. I grew up in the ANC, you know. But when I had made that decision, then some people, I mean, one of the things that make me so feel so good is when people come now and say, but how did you see this so early? At that time, we were swearing at you, but now we can see what you were talking about. Look, if I'm to put it harshly, I say this to people. The only thing standing between black people and their freedom at the moment is the ANC. And until they wake up to that fact and remove the ANC as the obstacle, that then freedom will never really be here. It's that harsh. And it's not a decision I came to very easily. There were certain pointers for me earlier on, maybe because I know the organization so well, that I knew that this is a point of no return. It's just gone. It will never, never. You know, people hanker, and I say it's like losing a partner or a parent or so on. I'm sure you always want them to come back. But yes. No, the ANC is gone. It's long dead, actually. It's just a question of when it will be buried.
So how does it work, Endlini? Because your wife, Sisi Mpumi, is an ANC,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You are EFF. How does it work?
It works quite well. It goes back to this thing about people thinking things are taken personally.
Yeah.
No, it works well. She's a staunch ANC. I tell you, and if there's one person that I know I will never be able to recruit, it is her.
Even
last night, yeah. I try. Yeah. Well, I've got all the kids now, so I'm good. So if there was an election at home, I would emerge victorious.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
all of the kids.
Yeah, I think all of there's one who's not declaring yet. Yeah.
Yet, but
yeah.
Ideology. Okay, you can see where it's going.
Yeah. So no, it works like that. I mean, yesterday we had a debate. I can't remember. It was some Pulemabe thing was saying something on TV, and I said something, and she said, "No, you're wrong." So it happens all the time. Yeah. And then after that, we go out or do something else. Yeah, but I think after so many years now, it has become. It's not even a matter of. There's no effort really. I managed to change her soccer club when we were still going out. So I don't think I'm going to change her political club.
You've already done too much.
Yeah.
Okay. So joining the EFF, you know, I got a tweet here that I put down. Someone said, when Dalimpofu represented Zuma, Julius Malema ordered him to represent
Yes,
Jacob
I
Zuma.
Saw that.
We often talk about whether the EFF is a one-party man or not. What's your experience of the EFF? I mean, is Julius Malema really as powerful and as a one-man powerful who holds and controls this party like we often hear analysts say?
No, I think that narrative is really so mistaken. You know, Julius Malema, powerful, yes, of course, he's powerful. But this dictator who runs the whole... How is that even possible, Clement? Just imagine you run a party like the EFF, which is present across the entire country, 52 regions of the country, some of which some of us have never even visited. There are people there who run the EFF somewhere in the Northern Cape, in Springbok or whatever. Do you think every time they have to make a decision, they must phone to Les Malema and say, no, this isn't tomorrow, we want to do this? It's impossible in a party as democratic and as of the size of the EFF, let alone those of us who were leaders like me in the EFF. And I always say to people, then why do we always have all these big meetings, sometimes for 3 days, you know, debating policy and so on, fighting over this and that position? because we shouldn't be wasting our time. We should just wake up and take a phone call and say, what does Julius Malema want today? Mm. And then we go all implement that. No, it doesn't work like that. I've always made this example. You know, the kinds of debate and fights, literally, that we have had in the EFF, where Julius Malema comes with a particular position and it goes into the meeting and we come and say, no, this is not. And then he gets defeated or I get defeated in the debate. By the time we go to a press conference or we're writing a manifesto, it is by then a distillation of all those views. Mm. You've won some debates, you've lost some. Particularly the most exciting time is when we do election manifestos. Mm. That's when, because everybody wants their idea. Yeah. Even up to the slogan that is going to be on the poster, we fight over that until there's some kind of consensus. Yeah.
Do you think that the party can survive without him?
Certainly, I have no doubt about that. Particularly now, maybe in the first 2-3 years, it was all around him as a personality. Also, because some of the people, the first support base we had would have been people who had moved with him from the Youth League. Yeah. Mm. Now it has gone through that. I mean, the elderly people will ask more EFF than Julius Malema, if you know what I mean. So I have no doubt that the party can survive. It won't be easy because it's a new party, but it's something that has to happen. I mean, none of us are indispensable, and the last person who thinks he's indispensable is Julius Malema.
Yeah. So soon we'll probably have a new leader of the EFF.
Absolutely.
And the will still do very well.
Absolutely.
Okay. It's 9 minutes before 11 o'clock. When we come back, we will continue and wrap up our discussion with Advocate Dalim Pof. I'll take your calls as well. And yes, I see your questions. I'll ask him that. I'll try and, put in at least 3 questions from the WhatsApp line and at least 2 or 3 calls before we wrap up with another favorite song of the Advocate.
Hanging out with Clement on 702. Let's walk the talk.
It's 6 minutes before 11 o'clock. We're wrapping up our chat with Advocate Dalim Pof. Advocate, we've got a few minutes left. I want to take some questions from listeners as well. Mm. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about was about your passion for rugby. Mm. You're still doing the tournament, the rugby tournament in the Eastern Cape.
Yes, and I am. And that's probably one of the biggest regrets I have about COVID. Because obviously for the past 2 years, we have not been able to do it.
Yeah.
No, it's something that I don't compromise for. My Easter weekend is always for that rural rugby tournament.
That's amazing. And you've posted a picture with Makazola Mapimpi holding
the trophy. Yes, we're very proud. Mapimpi is one of the products, quote
That's
unquote,
amazing.
We say. At least he played in the tournament, but we claim him as
that's
definitely
amazing.
A product.
Yeah. Panda, you're calling us from Pretoria. Quick and sharp. Good morning.
Straight to the point, Clement, and greetings to Advocate Pofu. Mm. Advocate Hello. Said something that hit me very hard, and it's a rude awakening for me. And he said, the only thing that's standing between a black person and freedom is the ANC. Mm. I want, and he said this in passing, can you please, do due diligence on this and give him an hour to come up back again and address us and give us more on that, and please, let's not waste time before the end of October, before the elections. I think we need to digest this. We need more truth on that.
All right. You commit to that, Advocate?
I commit.
We'll check with you. Bekani, you are in Soweto. Good morning.
Hello. How are you, Clement?
Hey, Tara.
Yes. I once worked at Engine Garage in Rosebank, opposite Rosebank Mall.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Advocate used to stay around there. I was a petrol attendant there.
Mm.
So I used to say literally everyone, the Guptas, Duduzani Zuma, you know, Dali, that's the real man. He treats everyone as a person.
Thank
At
you.
One point, he had a Malawian guy who was driving around with his Jaguar, an old Jaguar like. So I think he's one of the most humblest person that I've ever met. That's all from my side.
Yeah, that's amazing, Bekani. Thank you for reflecting on that.
Thank you so
Advocate,
much.
Advocate, there's also a question that people are also keep on putting up here, and I think it's people who love to hate you. And I want you to tell me if it bothers you. Often, when people want to shut you down, they will often make references to, oh, we know what happened with you and Mama Winnie back in the past. Does it still bother you? And do you get the sense that people don't even know the context and they just use it as a jab to attack you?
No, absolutely. Well, you still, you say, does it still bother me? No, it has never,
it's never bothered you.
Ever at all. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because I see it's also coming up on the WhatsApp line.
No. Yeah, you're right. It's one of those things that when people run out of things to say,
they go to that.
Yeah.
Advocate, I wanted to play that song.
You have to.
Okay, I'm going to play news. I have to play it after the news because we have to go to a break. But let me at least do this. There's someone who asked a question about justice. Says, please ask the advocate on his opinion regarding access to justice for the men in the street, the expenses of the courts and the attorneys. How can access be improved and the cost also be minimized?
Yeah, look, there is simply no access to justice. I mean, this is... The people who can really afford what we were talking about earlier are very few, very, very few. It's only big companies that can really go and get the choice advocate that they want and the attorneys the best and so on. So unfortunately, we don't really service until we improve the pro bono system and even this charging story. We will never really, a person to afford one day in a court. And remember, by the time you go to court, you've had consultations and what have you. That's completely out of reach for the ordinary person. So it's a serious issue where there need to be government subsidies, but also I think the charging system is also distorted and quite frankly overdone.
All right. After the news at 11 o'clock, I'll play one of Advocate's favorite songs, Miriam Makeba, because we're out of time now. But thank you for making time, Advocate.
Thank you, Clement. Thank you. I enjoyed it. Thank you. And thank you to the listeners and for the kind words. Thank you.